I really got focused on building a human-powered life. And I've always believed that everything great that happens to anyone is the result of a human interaction. And so I've always over-indexed my relationships. I've always over-indexed those people that are around me. And the ones that have the ability to reciprocate and give back in a way that's meaningful to me, I always seem to hyper-index them in my world and try to do great things for them.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. Gridiron and Growth, the podcast that takes you inside the minds of business champions. We are the hosts, Benny Fowler, Ryan Harris, yours truly, champions of Super Bowl 50, but more importantly, here to help you find yourself on your personal or professional journey. And always remember, friends, make sure to like, subscribe, and share the podcast with some awesome people who want to grow too. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a fantastic guest for you again on the Gridiron and Growth podcast. He is a founder, a connector, a giver, an inspirer of so many things across the world. In the last 20 years, he has founded 5 companies, and his newest project, High Wing, is set to shake up the 200-year-old insurance industry by creating a 21st-century transaction platform. But more importantly, he is one of the best people persons that Benny and I know. Please welcome the legend, the man, Eric Matysik. What's up, brother?
Hello, hello, hello. Hello. Great to see you, Benny. Always awesome to see you, Ryan. Thank you guys so much for having me. What a treat. You're two of my favorite humans in the entire state of Colorado, and really, really excited to have a great chat today.
Well, you know, it's amazing you mentioned the humans. We both had separate interactions with you as we transitioned out of the NFL, interactions that benefited us greatly. How do you create these connections that are just so powerful for anybody that you spend time with?
Early on in my career, I really got focused on building a human-powered life. And I've always believed that everything great that happens to anyone is the result of a human interaction. Mm. Whether that's a promotion, whether that's a marriage, whether that's a friendship, whether it's getting on a baseball team, whatever is going to happen in your life that's going to have a consequential impact on your future, it's going to happen through human interaction. So I've always over-indexed my relationships. I've always over-indexed those people that are around me. And the ones that have the ability to reciprocate and give back in a way that's meaningful to me, I always seem to hyper-index them in my world and try to do great things for them. And both you guys have been just incredibly generous to me, and I really am thankful.
Ryan, how did you meet Matysik?
I first met Eric Matysik at the largest free tech conference in Denver Startup Week. And I met him and Tammy Doerr, who we've had on, yep. Ben Data, Notre Dame guy, we'll have on in the future. But I mean, I went to Denver Startup Week in Denver, and this was the most inclusive, encouraging, like high expectations of everyone environment I'd ever been around. And there's just this connection. And Eric was like, hey, how can I help? What are you thinking of doing? And I mentioned something. I'm getting into speaking. He connected me with a speaker that drastically changed the outlook of my entire speaking career. And I was like, man, I didn't even know this guy 6 months ago. And what's going on here? And you talk about indexing. Like, what does that mean for people who don't know when you index a relationship? Like, you asked the question, but you were actually listening and you actually made a connection. Is that the index part, or what's the index mean?
I think it's really obvious to understand those people who care and those people that want to give back, those people that want to have a relationship, those people that want to engage in having two-way communication and engage in making one another better. Like, it's easy to pick those people out. Like, not everyone's wired that way. There's a lot of people you'll have a conversation with and you walk away and be like, I might not talk to them again. Like, that's life. Yeah. But the ones that dig in, that have true, genuine interest, that have a love for humans and that have a love for helping people be a better version of themselves, I love those people. And I magnetically try to attract as many as possible because ultimately they make my life better. And if I have a chance to, in some small way, accelerate someone's success, like, I'm going to do it all day long because I know in the long term, each one of those bricks that I lay down individually over time, they come back in a snowball in my own life. And I just feel so blessed to, you know, be in this circle of amazing humans in my life.
Love that. You know, as Ryan talked about in the start, you are a builder. You're one of the founding members of Denver Startup Week. Talk to us about how that came about, because it is – you've also helped my speaking career because you've given me opportunities to speak on stage and virtually during COVID to Denver Startup Week. So we'd love to know where the idea came, how that started, and all the incredible people that you have, from Jason Mendelsohn to Matt McCall,
Jesse Itzler.
Yeah, all these incredible people speaking to these founders.
Denver Startup Week is really a great story of collaboration. When you think about the best of Denver, it's truly a melting pot of people that want to create things to better the city. And Denver Startup Week, if you roll back to 2011, we were just coming out of the last great recession, structured mortgage bond crisis, like the real estate crisis. Like, we were just repairing the city. And as the city was coming back, we recognized that Boulder was an epicenter for all things tech and innovation. And we thought, you know, Denver has got a pretty good future. We've got great talent. We've got a bustling city that's only getting better. We've got a few tech companies in the city, but really, if you start to get big, it was a place that you needed to move your business to have a lot of employees or build companies at scale. And so it was natural for us to look around and say, how can we really, you know, build something here that tells the story of Denver, that tells the story of the community, and most importantly, celebrates the entrepreneurs that are building great companies in our city. And so with that small idea, it had come out of some work we did with the Startup America Partnership, which was with Brad Feld and Phil Weiser, who's now our attorney general. They were just getting underway with starting Boulder Startup Week. And I was riding back in the car with Nancy Phillips, who's one of our great entrepreneurs here, started Flexential, previous to that company, ViaWest. And we said, can we do that in Denver? And she's like, yeah, we should be able to do that in Denver. We should do that. And so with that one small thought, we pulled together a group of folks at the Wynkoop Brewery over some beers. And we said, what do you think about this? Can we put our version of Denver Startup Week together to really tell the story of the city? And from that small, you know, 8-9 person, you know, founding team, you know, fast forward 12 years, we've peaked at 20,000 attendees. We've had thousands of sessions over the course of those years and have hopefully impacted a lot of companies in the course of doing that and telling the story of Denver. And so it's really a fun story of collaboration and just give first mentality that if everybody in the community gives all they've got to an incredible program, the programmer is a reflection of them. And life doesn't get better than that.
Well, part of the Denver Startup Week, though, that I want to key in on, you've created an atmosphere for anybody to be welcome. This is a day and age now you're hearing, well, you know, we're not going to focus on DEI. We are going to focus on DEI. I never saw the words DEI at Denver Startup Week, and I have never seen more people of color, more women, more tall people, short people, all the things. What went into building a culture that doesn't have to say things because you see it in the people that are presenting, in the people that are being interviewed? Like, how did you make that in this environment?
It really boils down to a couple things. I mean, first and foremost, it starts with a vision. The program itself is set to celebrate all entrepreneurs. And so the word all, we like triple underline. Wow. All means all walks of life. Like, whether you're building a burrito business out of a igloo cooler next to Coors Field, or whether you're building the next Ibotta and company that's going to go public here in our state.
Just saw that.
I mean, we don't care. Like, there's no discretion as to what classifies a great business. And so when you triple underscore and triple underline the word all, that means everyone. That means all walks of humans, all walks of folks that have an ambition to do something great in Denver. We want them at Startup Week, and we want them to be celebrated.
But what did you do? You know, because it's not just Startup Week, too. So the other companies you've run, like, so does that change the people you talk to? Does it change the places you're going to seek talent? I mean, how did you physically get it done?
So the second piece of that is the physical way we got it done. We have an incredible team of volunteers that run all of our tracks, that run our entire program, over, you know, 20 plus people a year that just blood, sweat, and tears pour their life into Denver Startup Week. This topic was a topic that was intimately important to them. There was no compromise in our ability to not include all people in Denver Startup Week. So by setting the vision and then having an amazing group of co-chairs and session leaders and track leaders carry out the mission to make sure that it was highly inclusive and highly visible and inclusive of all entrepreneurs in our city, it took an army of humans to execute it. But with that shared vision, we all played off the same playbook. And you know, when you play off the same playbook, you win.
Talk to me a little bit about just the people you put around yourself. And I'm talking about specifically the Goodwood Club. And because I've been now to the Goodwood Luncheon, which is, you've never been to it?
I'm not rich enough.
So
I'm listening, though.
It's free.
That's how rich you got to be if it's free. Don't be clever.
Maybe actually it's not free. I got invited by somebody who bought a table. But I know how that kind of started with, you know, that's your own forum of incredible people who are doing incredible things. But you guys are accountability buddies. Talk a little bit about your thoughts or just how you've surrounded yourself with the right people. Because it sounds like you always have a good team of people. I always say Life is a team sport. Who's in your C-suite from to help you with your family, to help you with your finances, to help you with your faith? Who's on your team? And you've done a really good and thoughtful job of putting people on your team. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, when I think about living a human-powered life, it really boils down to the humans you put around yourself. I think it's commonly known and said that, you know, you're a combination of the five most frequently interacted people around you on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So if one of those is your spouse, your partner, your wife, who are the other four that are influencing your life? Are they brothers? Are they business leaders? Are they friends? And how do they behave? And so Goodwood Club was really a reflection of that. It was eight guys that came together, all different walks of life, career, backgrounds, but we had a common goal. We wanted to be great husbands. We wanted to lead in our community, and we wanted to leave an impact that was bigger than ourselves when we're 70, 80 years old here in Denver. And so with that shared vision, the eight of us got together and we built the Goodwood Club. And through that, we did a lot of amazing fundraising activities and a lot of things that impacted the community. But at its core, it's a group of eight amazing men that get together that talk about the throes of life. We've gone through incredible challenges. We've gone to the depths of challenging things in that group with individual members that have had huge, huge, huge tragedy and trauma in their life. And we've celebrated the ultimates of success, whether it's businesses being sold or things that, you know, are all along the trail of life. And in that, we've just been great brothers. And I think that backbone and that foundation, it just keeps you straight. It keeps you honest. And when you have long-term relationships over a long period of time, the honesty factor is an all-time high. Mm-hmm. And so there's no BS in that group. Like, you call it as you see it. People know who we are and what we're trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish. And if you're driving straight and being held accountable to it, people are going to let you know. And if you're not, they're brothers that are going to hit you on the shoulder and say, hey, like, straighten up. And I think we all need that leadership and we all need that direction in life. And so surrounding yourself with folks that have that shared vision of what you want to ultimately achieve allows you to be better, which, you know, I think we did through the Goodwood Club. And, you know, I've always, you know, done that in my life.
Yeah.
When dealing with humans, having that human-powered life, inevitably some humans are going to disappoint you. What was a time when you had built a relationship, a great relationship, and maybe somebody had fooled you or did you wrong? Like, how did it feel and what did you do after that?
I've always believed that karma is the greatest equalizer in life. And there's always going to be great things that happen and you can celebrate those. And there's going to be things that are unfortunate, that are devastating, that are traumatic that happen, and they're going to happen. Like, that's life. Mm. And karma is the great equalizer. Karma is never lost. And so I've always looked at those situations in life where I've been in the, you know, unfortunate or disappointing situation of interacting with some humans that either didn't follow through on what they said or, you know, betrayed me or, you know, whatever it was in my life that was really challenging. And I've always tried to, you know, step away in a way, like, I think Michelle Obama says it best, you know, when they go low, we go high.
Right.
And I feel like that's the elixir in life, that if you can keep your chin up and just know that if you can put good energy into the world, good energy is going to come back. And there's going to be those points in life that you get kicked in the shins and that you're disappointed. But if you can walk through it with a good attitude and be positive and even be grateful and graceful with those that did it. Mm. Like, I've always lived by the mantra that hurt people hurt people.
Yeah, yeah.
And if hurt people are hurting people, it's inevitable. They're living a life that I probably don't want to be in. If they're hurting me, they're probably in shoes that I would never want to walk in.
Wow.
Whether it's their own relationship with their spouse, whether it's a relationship with their kids, whether it's a relationship with their self, whether it's mental health issues. Like, there's a lot of things that I think impact, you know, people's happiness. And most of the time, hurt people hurt people. And, you know, I try to smile and work through it and walk with grace and just know that karma is going to come back and, you know, hopefully it'll be in my corner.
You just talked about a couple of different perspectives. You talked about your positive mindset. You talked about being resilient. You talked about being persistent. Those are all things that are qualities and characteristics to build a great company. Talk to us about building great companies, because you've been a part of founding companies, helping them scale, helping them grow. So talk to us about what that journey is like.
I've been lucky enough and fortunate enough to either be the founder or work for five founders and building companies from the ground up. I've always been like the first firefighter on the scene. So an idea comes in the room and we need to put some capital behind it. We need to find some people to execute it. We need to build something. I've been fortunate to be at that inception point five times in my career. So you learn some pattern recognition as you go through that, that makes it easier to build really great businesses over time. The one thing that has never changed across all five of those companies, the company is a product of the humans that are leading it. And so being really, really maniacal, especially in your first 15 to 20 hires, interviewing every single one of them, hand selecting them into the business, inviting them to be part of the tribe, inviting them to be part of the team is critical, because they're going to be the ones that are leading the company when you have 50 employees. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be the ones leading the company when you have 100 employees. So if you choose wrong in the beginning, that culture can be soured in a way that's hard to repair. If you choose right in the beginning, you build these amazing cultures of humans that have the ability to really inspire people to be the best versions of themselves. And so the companies that have succeeded, we've had incredible cultures. Like, I look at Highwing as an example. You know, the first 25 employees that we brought into Highwing were meticulously picked out. And we have a world-class culture of teamwork and team building and leadership and autonomy and integrity, like all the things and buzzwords that you want. But that's been handcrafted. Building cultures is hard work, and the outcomes have been reflective of that. In companies where we haven't been as focused on culture, it's been chaotic. We've ran into mishaps that could have been easily avoided if we would have picked the right people at the right time. And so I always come back to this like center pivot in my life that, you know, put the right people around the projects, the activities, the organizations, the family that you want to build, and you're going to be successful.
What's that process look like, though? Because that is literally the same thing in sports.
Yeah.
You can see it with the draft picks. You can see it with people who are successful. You put these coaches around these incredible players with incredible talent. They do incredible things. It's a very simple concept that I don't think a lot of people can actually execute on. So what does it look like in the company in terms of picking the right people for the right project? How do you assess that?
So this might be a little controversial, but it's a deeply held belief that I've had. I've always said, never pick the tennis player and never pick the golfer to be on your team. Team sports and building businesses are identical.
Yeah.
And when you have tennis players on your team, when you have self-interest, high ego, the ability to think more of themselves than others around them, the ability to take accolades and celebrate themselves without celebrating others, it's poisonous. And so really finding those team players in the world that are deeply rooted in the values that you're trying to create within your company, that walk the values, live the values, breathe the values that you want to be reflective of your business is critical. And so in the hiring process, I think it's really important to outline what those things are. Is this person someone that you could work for? That's a big question. Like, turn the table. Mm. Like, could you work for that human? If you could work for that human, they probably have the same values. You probably have some level of mutual respect. You probably have some level of trust that you walked in and said, wow, I like this person.
That's a great question.
And, you know, I think those are really, really powerful things to consider. And so picking humans and having a really good set of values as you're going through that building process, it starts with your corporate values, but then there's the soft side. What do we really want this place to feel like? Mm-hmm. Do we want it to be highly empathetic? Mm. Do we want it to be a place that people can wildly fail and celebrate failure? And at the same level, we celebrate success. Like, what are the attributes that you want to have as you're building the business? If you define those, you can start to put people around those things, because it's pretty easy in an interview process to fester out someone's self-interest or intrinsic motivators versus their extrinsic, let me tell you about how awesome I am. Yeah. Let me tell you, like, I'm the greatest thing that's ever happened. Probably not the person you want to have on your team.
So Ryan's not somebody you want to have on your
team. Say what?
Tennis and golf players. Tennis and golf players, though, I would push back, would be great. Salespeople.
Amazing.
Commission-based.
Amazing.
Go out there. Go get it. They have their process that they follow, but they can go out there.
And I think there's a lot of places in business that you can have really, really successful individual contributors, mm-hmm. where you've got the level of competitiveness and tenacity that allows you to really succeed. Mm-hmm. You absolutely nailed it.
Yeah.
I think in building that founding team, though, you want teammates. Mm-hmm. You want the ones that are going to high-five at the high points. And when it's time to hold the line and – you know, make sure that no one gets any yardage. Like, you're going to hold the line and you're going to lock arms and you're going to grind in and dig deep and put your feet in the dirt and make sure nothing happens, man. And those are hard people to find. Yeah. And you got to look and you got to look and you got to look because, you know, when you find them, it's the difference between being successful in business or, you know, as in they say in football, inches matter, yeah. You fall inches short. Mm-hmm. And you can fall inches short in business all day long.
And that's millions of dollars.
And it's a people problem. It's not a strategy problem. Mm. It's a people problem. Mm. And people are going to be the ones that ultimately control that.
One of the things I loved about winning a Super Bowl is I learned what fighting sounds like on successful teams. It is shocking. It is loud. And it's handled. And you grow from it. What is fighting with a great people team sound like in the corporate world? How do you handle conflict in the corporate world positively?
I think the best teams have a healthy level of conflict. And that healthy level of conflict is conflict that is very respectful. I would say maybe one of the biggest differences is that being able to leave your ego at the door, be able to understand from someone else's perspective the challenge that they're undertaking or their perspective in the room or their perspective as it relates to solving that problem in business and being respectful in the response, I think that's what I look as really mature corporate like battling.
Like so saying respectful response meaning like, thanks for your statement, Eric. I'll think about that. Or like, what does that sound like?
No, I think it's really understanding someone's point of view, being empathetic to their position, and trying to not only understand what they're saying, but find that next level in thinking that elevates the discussion.
Hmm.
I really thought that, you know, we should strategically pursue this. And this is why this is really important to me. And my response would be, great. And we should strategically pursue that. And what do you think about if we pursued it? What about adding this element or this element or this element?
So building.
You're leveling up your thinking as you're going through the process until you come to a common point where you're like, wow, we've leveled this discussion up enough. We've battled because we didn't agree coming in, but we've battled as we've leveled it up. And now we're at a point where it's leveled up enough that we're going to go execute it. Like, I think that's really, really healthy. But it takes a culture of low egos. It takes a culture of high respect. It takes a culture of high integrity. It takes a culture of high empathy because being a great listener is highly empathetic. Mm-hmm. So to sit there and listen and engage and absorb and then respond, like those are human traits that you just can't go pick up off the street. Like, you have to search for them. So when you're building those early stage teams, you want to, you know, really, really embrace that competitive ability to put people in the room that can intellectually spar to the best outcome of the business. Not personally spar, but intellectually spar to the best outcome of the business.
Where did you see it on our team in terms of what really stands out to you in terms of that?
Oh, man. I mean, one, just every week, right? One of the things that Gary Kubiak did, different than other teams, I don't know if they did this for y'all, but they would give us, what do you like on third and short? What do you like on first and 10 for a run? What do you like on red zone? And it's like, whoa, you're giving us this opportunity. And then whenever calling plays they didn't like, I don't know if you remember this day in practice, my favorite days ever, Rick Dennison is running past 18 man.
Yeah.
Forget all y'all, muff. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm on an island. And I just turned to him intellectually, though. That's why I love that you said intellectually, because Rick Dennison, an engineer, master's in engineering. So what does he think? He thinks solutions and data. Yep. So I turned to him in my stance. I said, hey, Rico, what's our success rate on this play? And you know, Rico, rah! I was like, that's zero. Never ran the play again. Right, and we leveled up like that, and we're playing San Diego, four home field advantage. I think we had like four turnovers. I went up to Gary Kubiak, I said, "Pull your head out of your beep. Let us run the ball." We ran for over 200 yards. We won the game.
All right.
That's the intellectual sparring that you talk about. But you know, I don't see that a lot in corporate America. What I see mostly is they shut down because someone's mad at me, they don't like my idea, or I have to deal with this person. It's like, well, that person's on your team. Of course you do. You know,
I'd say corporate America too. Yeah. Corporate America, I think it's more of people actually being scared of saying something.
Right.
They are afraid of, oh, how this will go down.
But again, I think if you build a safe environment for your employees to be intellectually safe around the way that they talk, communicate, think, engage, mentally spar, you're not going to worry about what you say. Because you know that you're safe.
It's not personal. It's in the common spirit.
And I would defend that like the best, most innovative companies have built a executive chamber to be able to have these discussions on a daily, consistent basis to be able to have the best outcomes for the company. The ones that, to your point, if you don't have that intellectually safe space, you're going to have ideas that don't get executed. You're going to have people that don't speak up and repeat mistakes because it's easier to repeat a mistake than it is to speak up in the business and change the velocity because you're unsure about the outcome. Like the habits that come out of not having an intellectually safe place are devastating to the yes. company. The habits that come out of having an intellectually safe place are accelerating the business. And so I would argue the best companies have that congeniality.
I respectfully push back just because I've been around a couple of successful companies right now where I think there could be more healthy conflict, but the cultures are great. I just think that some of these people who want to bring their ideas to the table haven't actually done their preparation or their work to bring their idea to the table. They have a great idea, but they haven't flushed it out or are ready to present it. Like, hey, I'm ready.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I think this. All right, well, then present it. Then they don't want to do that work to actually say it. Because I don't actually think the C-suite is like, oh, no, we're not listening to anything. But if I'm going to bring your suggestions on first and second down or third and short, you better be why. Mm-hmm. Coaches are just going to be like, all right, that's cool.
Yeah.
You're going to explain like, oh, no, this is why.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense. So
having passionate ideas with no data is just as dangerous.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh, wow. Yes.
And I think, again, what's driving that?
Yeah.
Ego.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm passionate about something with no data, that's my ego telling you that I'm right. That's not me telling you, here are the facts. Let's make a great decision. How many times we ran this play that it's worked? Zero.
Yeah.
That's the data.
Yeah.
That is, hey, we're not running this play because I don't – like. I'm telling you I don't want to run it. Why? Because I don't want to run it.
Right.
And that's ego.
Yeah.
And so, again, that low ego environment I think is so critical to setting the stage to be successful.
Yeah.
How does a human separate themselves in a job interview with Eric Matisek to be a part of that inner circle, that strong group, that company that's on the rise? What can humans do to separate themselves in the everyday interview process?
There's a handful of things that always stand out to me when I meet new recruits or new folks that are trying to either join our company or I get pulled into folks that are joining other companies. The ones who show up that have a solution to a problem that I have always stand out. They understand my business. They understand what we're trying to accomplish. They come in with a handful of ideas and they fire them off. They're ready to like jump in with both feet and be like, hey, have you thought of this? I understand your company. I understand your product. The way I was thinking about it was you should do X, Y, and Z. Like I think the initiative to be able to show up for an interview or a conversation and give something off the bat is really, really powerful.
Preparation.
This might sound stereotypical, but I find it still doesn't happen a lot, is that the number of people that follow up in a meaningful, heartfelt, generous way is very low. You always get the customary, very nice to meet you, thank you so much.
Yeah.
like I get those all day long. But I love the ones that are like, hey, very nice to meet you. The discussion we had really changed my perspective and how I was thinking about the opportunity. I'm now even more excited because the values that you have align with my values. And I'm super excited to work with you and the team. Like going 10 feet deeper and taking some patience to respond in a heartfelt, empathetic way is going to make you stand out. And I would say the last one is I'm a fire hunter. So when you find those, scratch and dent, rough and tough ones, that show up in your office that you can just sense they have an insatiable fire in their stomach, I don't care what they want to do. If they want to be in sales, if they want to be a software engineer, if they want to be in marketing, if you're going to come in and just run circles around, the environment and the people that you're with, like iron sharpens iron. And the more people you have leveling up the teammates in the team, it's just going to raise everybody's game. So when you find those ones that have that fire in their belly, it's going to attract more people that have fire in their belly. And that's just builds a better business.
Being a founder, being a part of founding teams and companies, number one key leadership advice for the last question.
Number one piece of leadership advice that I would give those who are starting companies is pick your partners and people wisely. Companies are built by investors. You got to pick them right. There's good investors and there's bad investors. Companies are built with partners, co-founders. There's good co-founders and there's bad co-founders. And companies are built with teammates. And the teams that you build are reflective of the company that you want to ultimately create. And I would spend a tremendous amount of my time in every single one of those categories, finding the right people that align with your values, that align with your heart, that align with the outcomes of the company you're trying to build. And most importantly, are reflective of the relationships you want to have on a daily basis, because you got to interact with them. You got to enjoy them. You got to smile and you got to feel great about the interactions on a daily basis. Pick the right ones. And taking the time and energy to do that maniacally will make you happier, will make the business more successful, and most importantly, will allow you to achieve the outcomes that you really set out to do.
Well, the Gridiron and Growth podcast audience knows we picked the right guest today. Thank you, Eric Matisek, founder of High Wing. Visit them at highwing.io. Love spending time with you. Thank you for your leadership, your connection, and your human-powered life.
Appreciate you.
You guys are the best. Thank you so much for hosting me today. Can't wait for the next one. You're amazing.